Leah, in what way do you remember your first bicycle?
Oh, my first bicycle. The first one I had was a used bike from my parents, 5-speed. And I remember we had a one block that we could ride around. And I remember trying to ride around it 5 times in the hardest gear. And there was a hill. And I thought that was the way that you became a good biker. I was probably, 7 years old or something.
Yeah. Who taught you, your dad or your mom or both?
Both my parents did. And I didn't actually end up riding much as a kid, just around the neighborhood a bit. And then I got a new bike for my birthday that was 10-speed. And then it was stolen out of my driveway a week later. And then the 5-speed bike was stolen too. So then after that, I was like, forget it. I'm not riding bikes. Someone's just going to steal it. So then after that, I was just rollerblading.
Yeah, and in interviews and movies, you say that you started cycling like regularly at the age of 20 when you commuted to your job, and you started riding longer distances when visiting relatives and to save money by not buying a train ticket to get there. How would you describe the change or the evolution from cycling as a necessity and cycling for pleasure?
Yeah, the change from riding for need to riding for fun took, maybe 7 years really for me, because I did start riding to commute, and then I started riding to travel, so bike touring. And even when I was doing that, I thought, the bike is just my vehicle to get around, and I didn't feel like I really loved it. And I just kept riding anyway because I thought it was the best way to travel, because I've never owned a car, and I like being under my own power, and walking and running just takes too long and it's too hard to carry stuff. But it really took, 7 years and actually an injury from running to make me see the bike as something that I could do for sport, for fun, for kind of an outlet from feeling stressed or anything else in my life. And so, yeah, I injured my Achilles, my ankle, working as a waitress. So I couldn't run. And then I started borrowing my mom's road bike, which was a lighter, faster, better bike than I'd ever ridden, and riding it as far as I could on my days off. So I'd ride first 200K and then 300 and then 400 and then 500. And finally, I did a race a couple months later that was 600K, all in one go. And I didn't even know if I could finish it. And it was in Alaska where I'm from, and I just kept going. And then by the end of the race, I was tired, but I thought, I'm not even that tired. I could keep going. And that's when I knew that I could ride these ultra distances and that I actually liked it. And then the bike, it kind of switched from just a tool to a way to really see the world and kind of push myself to my limits.
So since quite some years, you are a professional ultra endurance racer. And in 2016, you won the Trans-Am bike race across the United States from west to east, which is more than 6,800 kilometers by riding it in 18 days. You also set the women's record twice on the Tour Divide from Canada to Mexico, which is 2,700 miles or more than 4,300 kilometers. And you are currently aiming for the overall record, which means riding it faster than in about 14 days. So what was the longest distance and the longest time you've been riding?
Oh, the longest distance. Yeah, the Trans Am, the 7,000 kilometer race, was definitely the longest race I've ever done. Oh, man. And it felt like it was never going to end. And it was really, really hard. It was really hot. I think in one go, probably the longest distance I've ridden is 600K in like one stretch. And that took like a day, 24 hours. Yeah, I'm trying to think in the longest time. Oh, so I did a time trial on the Arizona Trail, which is a hiking trail. So that's mountain biking. And I rode that. It was 500K of single track. And I did the whole thing without sleeping. So that took 51 hours. My friend had set the women's record, and she rode it so fast and she didn't sleep at all that I thought, I'll never have a chance unless I don't sleep. So I thought, I don't even know if I can stay up for 2 nights in a row, but I'll just try. So for that, I closed my eyes for 7 minutes the whole time because I couldn't see straight at a certain point. It's just everything was kind of moving. So I just laid down on the ground with my helmet on, closed my eyes, meditated for 7 minutes, and then got up and kept going, and it worked. And I missed her record by 57 minutes. But I'm definitely going to go after that full trail, the 800-mile trail in early April and try to break the women's record on that. I think it's somewhere around 9.5 days at this point. So,
yeah, because as you said, you haven't slept for 51 hours on the Arizona Trail. So what would you say, at which point is the human body definitely, or does the human body definitely reaches an insurmountable limit? Did you have any moments where you recognized, this is it, I can't go any further, I have to sleep or I have to rest my legs?
Yeah, I mean, I just had to rest my eyes and my brain, because also that's like a narrow trail and you're riding in the dark and all these animals are coming out. And, you know, just to even keep in control, I just thought at some point you just slow down so much that you might as well just sleep, wake up, and then you'll ride faster. So that's always kind of the balance, is if I sleep, will I ride faster and make up the time? And then for something that only takes 2 days, it's really hard to compete with not sleeping, because that's just your overall average is faster. But if something takes 2 weeks, like the Tour Divide, then you have to sleep, because you just can't, you can't do it all without sleep. So you have to kind of have a strategy of when and where you'll sleep and how you can make up the time later. So for something like the Tour Divide, 14 days, I aim to sleep about 4 hours a night, which I find has been like the balance of sleeping enough to feel mentally and physically okay. And some people do less than that, you know, and that's, I mean, one of the guys I was racing sleeps only every third night. So he stays up two full nights, sleeps on the third night, stays up two full nights, sleeps on the third night. And that just makes me feel nauseous. You know, it's like you, I just can't imagine how bad you must feel. Because that's another part of it too, is like, I love the competition, but I also love enjoying where I'm riding, you know, and feeling, yeah, you feel tired, you feel some pain, but you also feel so excited to be out there. And I feel like if I lost that, it wouldn't be worth it anymore. You know, it's like, what a gift to ride through such beautiful places. Let's not ruin them. So for me, it's like finding the balance of pushing myself, but still having fun and still kind of getting to see the beauty of it.
And when you ride long distance races like the Tour Divide, you're in race mode for more than 2 weeks, including, yeah, as we talked about, sleep deprivation or a huge calorie deficit as well. So how does this work for you and your body? Do you think it's the permanent adrenaline pushing your body, or is it some kind of preparation or training beforehand, or is it a mix of both?
I mean, I think it's, you are like taking on things that shouldn't be humanly possible. So there is some kind of adrenaline going or some kind of manic energy on some level. But then also it's there, it, because it's self-supported and because it's a continuous clock, it's about making good decisions throughout the day. You know, making sure you have enough food, enough water, making sure your equipment is working, you know, that you physically feel okay. And so I feel like that's part of what makes self-supported ultra racing so interesting, because things happen along the way. You know, you have some kind of mechanical, or you have some kind of injury, or, you know, the shop's closed when you thought it was going to be opened. And then how do you react to that? You know, what do you do next? Do you kind of think about it for the next full day, or do you just move on and make something else work? You know, and I feel like, especially in that sleep deprived, exhausted state, it's so easy to kind of get overwhelmed, that you have to really stay kind of focused and positive about moving forward and doing your best. And I mean, that's when all the interesting stories happen.
Yeah. And do you have some kind of like strategy for those low moments, both physically and mentally?
I do. So I, you know, I used to feel like I'd go into more of this dark hole of thinking, you're not fast enough, you're not good enough, this is going wrong, that's going wrong. And now I just say, if I start thinking that way, I just think, forget it. There's nothing else I can do. Am I trying my hardest? If the answer is yes, then I have to be happy with that. And also realize that, you know, even if I feel bad, it won't last forever. An hour later, I'll feel better. I might even feel great. And that's such a cool part of it too, is that you go through these huge waves of emotion mentally, and then also physically, how your body is performing. So, you know, not to focus too much on the negative, and then, you know, really appreciate feeling good out there and seeing. And sometimes it's like the surroundings can be inspiring, or sometimes you just eat something good and you're like, wow, I feel so much better. It can be so simple, you know, and it's like, I think most people go through that in any bike tour too. It's like you're getting blown around in the wind and then all of a sudden it's like it stops, or you find like a nice place to get food and like your total day changes, you know. And most people in life, like, they don't put themselves in those uncomfortable situations, but in the end, it's like you get a wider range of experience and you appreciate what you have, you know. I mean, I don't know. There's bad weather, there's physical pain, but it usually doesn't last too long.
Yeah, and at the end, the essentials like food, they matter. They bring happiness during the day,
exactly.
Cycling. And as you told us, yeah, at the beginning, you started cycling or race cycling with a road bike, but now you mostly do gravel or off-road cycling. So why do you prefer this probably much harder way of riding?
Yeah, that's true. It is harder, but you're in usually on dirt, you're in more remote places, so it's quieter. There's less traffic, usually more beautiful places, especially if you're in the mountains. I feel like, you know, you just get access to different places and different ways of life. And then, you know, a lot of them are still kind of mixed terrain. So you do end up riding some pavement too, and you go in between towns and mountains and villages and just, kind of beautiful settings. And I really like that. You know, I mean, now I often look at a race and if it has big mountain passes, I know I'm gonna like it just because it's like climbing, you end up seeing a lot more, you get better views, and then the people that live out there are often more interesting because it's a harder way of life too, so that's definitely more appealing to me. And also better serves my strength as a rider because I'm small, so climbing for me is always going to be a benefit. But I don't know, there is like a limit to it too. Something like the Arizona Trail that's super technical, that becomes such a physical beating that I don't seek that out as much. I'd rather be on like a dirt road, even if it's a really poor quality dirt road. It's just not as physically demanding or mentally. So I guess that's kind of been my sweet spot. I would love to race more endurance road, but I just feel like it's too dangerous riding in traffic in the night. You know, such a high chance of getting hit by a car, but it's so much easier. It's so fast. It's so kind of effortless. And, you know, you don't even need good lights to see by. But I feel like the danger of car traffic is just too high, too risky.
As we already talked about how important good food is, or yeah, how essential and this is. So what's your favorite food while racing or while being on a trail or an off-road?
Yeah, I wish, I mean, you know, I really wish I could just bring ice cream with me, but there's no way to pack it. Yeah, what else? You know, I guess I get tired of sweets, so having like savory kind of substantial food like pizza or burritos or, you know, a sandwich even is usually kind of what I go for day after day because you just want real food. You know, you can supplement it with sports nutrition. You end up eating, like I eat a lot of pastries if I'm in Europe because they're always delicious. So, but you know, at some point, like while racing, eating becomes your job. You just have to keep eating. But then, you know, while touring, it's like you can try different foods. And then when I'm actually at home, I love, you know, cooking fresh food, like eating salads and making good dressing for them and, you know, cooking eggs. And I mean, it's pretty simple, but it's just so much better than just eating bread all the time. So, I love food. As a cyclist, it's kind of part of the job, but I really do like good fresh food.
And if we counted right, this year you started your fourth attempt on setting the overall record on the Tour Divide. So what is your motivation to ride this route over and over again?
Oh, I know. It's just, I feel like the Tour Divide, I just can't get a good window on it, you know, and it's just going to drive me crazy because now I've ridden it, you know, racing it four times. I've toured it another time. It's like, I know it all so well and it's almost not that interesting anymore because I've ridden it so much. But then I think, wow, I still feel motivated to get this overall record. And I feel like that is attainable if I don't have, you know, bad weather or other problems. So, yeah, I just want to have a good effort at it and be able to finish and then I can just be done with that.
Yeah, and since a few years you can live from being a professional racer.
So how does this work exactly?
Yeah, it's amazing. Since 2018, I've been full-time just riding. And then that's not just racing, but it's also, you know, hosting a girls program and women's scholarships and coming up with these women's bikepacking challenges with Komoot and, you know, all these other projects too. So basically I make a calendar of all these dreams I have throughout the year. I want to be at this race. I want to ride this route. And then I share that with my sponsors and, you know, most of the time they're like, okay, that's great. And then if they want to do a media project about a specific event, then we kind of collaborate on that. But really I'm super grateful because I get to just kind of make my dream schedule. And then I work with different sponsors that support me throughout the year. So Specialized for bikes, SRAM for components, and then the list goes on from there. But it's been so much fun. Every brand's a little bit different on what they want to do. But for me, it's like any way I can ride my bike, I'm just happy to be doing it.
And having a look into the future, which other races or routes are on your bucket list?
Yeah, so we're going to Spain in April and hosting two women's bikepacking challenges with Komoot this summer. The first is on the Montañas Baxias route in Spain. So those are like 700 kilometer routes. And the idea is a group of 50 women will start together and then take on the route, but riding self-supported at their own pace. And it's not a race, but the goal is just to finish in a week. So both of you should come.
Maybe I can come.
You
sounds really good.
I might be in the States then. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good too.
Yeah, that's good too.
The second one is on the Torino Nice Rally, and we hosted an event last September, and we'll do it again. And that route is starting in Turin, Italy, to Nice, France, through the French and Italian Alps.
Oh, the one that you also did this year?
Yes. So we'll do it again.
So is there any other event you have in mind you want to take part and do a race?
I've been trying to do the race around Rwanda for the past couple of years. It's 1,000 kilometers around Rwanda, but I keep having to kind of postpone it for the next year because of COVID. So I've really been looking at that. Next year, I really want to do the across the Andes in Chile and Argentina. I think also about 1,000 or 1,100 kilometers. I really like, you know, these new smaller races popping up all over the world. I think to me, that's the most exciting at this point, especially in places I've never visited, because it's such a way to kind of get to know a place. And also, you know, if an organizer puts together a special route and invites me to come, then I feel like you already have, you know, so much in common as far as your love of bikepacking, but then in a new place. So learning, you know, what food do they eat? What's the terrain like? What do people do here? You know, I'm really interested in that for now. And this year there's a Trans-Balkans race. That sounds like so much fun. I think it's something like 2,000 kilometers or maybe a bit more. And I've bike toured there before and I just love touring and I think racing could be so fun too. So, you know, no real set ones, but I think especially because I've, you know, repeated riding the Tour Divide several times, like anything new and different in a new place is definitely more appealing.
And as we already mentioned, you since a few years can live from riding a bike, and there are not so many ultra endurance cyclists who can live from this, just doing cycling, and you are one of the few women participating in ultra distance racing and even being one of the best in the field. So how do you perceive your own role in this male dominated sport?
Yeah, I think I'm always thinking about trying to get more women out riding, out bikepacking, you know, girls, women, for fun, for racing, for adventure. It's like, it doesn't really matter what your approach is. It's just about doing it and then finding out what you like best, you know. But I feel like at this point, there are very few women participating, even fewer competing, and probably just because they don't even know about it. So by creating opportunities through programs, by making videos and other media and sharing these stories, more women might think, oh, I could possibly do that. I feel like cycling in general, we're often as women doubted. Like, oh, and even I was racing. Every time I'd show up for a race, I'd say, oh, are you serious? Are you even going to make it through the first day? You know, that first road race, I did the 600 kilometers. Like the guy, a guy said to me in the first 50K, you know, this is really long. I don't think you're going to make it, you know? And then who would say that to somebody and why, you know? And then in the end, I got second overall. This guy didn't finish the race, and yeah, you know, it was probably him feeling insecure, but I feel like we have to work really hard to encourage women to try things. And then, you know, it's like, maybe they don't want to race. Maybe they don't want to go deep into the mountains, and that doesn't matter. It's just about finding a way to connect to being outside and taking on challenges and feeling good about yourself.
You also do not hesitate to talk openly about sexistic behavior towards yourself in the bike scene. For example, the reactions towards the film project involved while racing the Tour Divide in 2019. You were harshly criticized while another male rider, also having a media crew with him, even got support on social media. So how did or how do you deal with this kind of, let's say, double standard?
Yeah, that was super frustrating situation, and so surprising, because I was being criticized by people I thought had been my friends, had supported me in the past. And, you know, and then I also took it very seriously, like, am I ethically doing something wrong by documenting what I'm doing? And I, you know, just thought circles around this for so long and realized in the end, really the only difference is that I'm a woman doing it, and that's why people are having problems with it. So now I feel like we should share more of these stories. You know, everybody should share their story about how their approach, how they're getting into this. And in that way, we can encourage more different people to try it out. Because, you know, this is kind of a thing where it's like, if you don't see somebody you connect to doing a sport, then you might not even consider doing it. And it's not only women. I've had messages from men too, just feeling like they felt so intimidated, and then they saw me take it on, and now they're taking on their own challenges too. So I feel like the more positivity we can share, the better. And a lot of it has to do with documentation. And I mean, if you don't document something, it's almost like it never happened, you know? So like the first two times I raced the Tour Divide, I think I have, like, you know, there were maybe three photos of me taken the entire time, and I can't even get access to them. The photographer won't sell me the images of myself. You know, so then it's like, well, how do I share that story? I can share it by telling it, but it means so much more with the photo, with the video. It's like people can see themselves in that place doing it. So at this point, I just think it's only positive to document, you know, these events. Of course, there's a level of care you have to take. You know, you don't want to interact with the riders. You don't want to kind of change their experience, because also that doesn't make for as good of photos or video either. So I'm super, super grateful to be working on a lot of these projects with my wife, Rue. She's a photojournalist, and she takes beautiful photos. I mean, I look back at them and think, I can't believe we actually got to ride there, you know? So that's been a big part of it too. And also a way that, you know, we can make a living doing this.
So it's about representation and, yeah, the percentage of women taking part on such races to hire it. So it's also about that. But maybe before we continue to talk about empowerment, as we mentioned, like, race cycling is a male-dominated sport still, or has been for a long time. How would you describe sexistic dynamics in the professional cycling sport? How do they look like, or what do you criticize about this kind of sport?
I mean, I guess the thing for me is that's most exciting is that I can actually win overall. So I actually get to compete directly with the men, which is so rare in most sports. I think really it only happens in ultra endurance, you know, running, swimming, cycling. And then that's super exciting to win the overall. I feel like I don't have as much perspective on the overall cycling scene, but I do know that, like, women's road cycling is terrible, is horrendous, as far as the, you know, the men are being paid 15 times as much as the women. There, it's really not a viable career. And I mean, it's almost impossible to do because the equipment's so expensive, the travel's so expensive, and these women aren't even making $1,000 a month. You know, it's like, that's a joke versus the men's scene. But I think, you know, it's like I can't focus too much on that because I don't even do it. But I do like, you know, in bikepacking, there's this level of equality where anybody could show up. Everybody starts together. Nobody knows how it's going to go. And then in the end, you know, someone like me could finish first. And that seems impossible when you line up next to all these guys with all this fancy equipment and they're so serious and they're telling you you're not going to make it through the first day. And then you end up beating them. You know, that's that kind of thing will change the world or will change the way we think about women in sports, because we've been told for so long that we're not capable of doing these long distance events, that it's bad for our bodies. But in the end, we actually have, you know, these different kinds of strengths that actually suit the sport very well.
This whole bike industry and also the clothing industry, for me, it seems it's, I mean, there's something going on there for more like gender equality. But still, there's also not gender equality in total. Like sometimes a brand has so much more clothes for men and then less for women, and then some strange colors.
Yeah.
And also the marketing is really like based on cliches and stuff like that. So what is there to do to get more gender equality also in the industry?
In the industry, it's also been, you know, when I work with brands that have more women that are actually employed by the brand, it makes a world of difference. Brands like SRAM that have 50% women in the company, or Komoot that I think must have more than 50% women in the company. It's just to have, like, to organize, you know, women's events with these brands, it's just everything so much easier because they're women too, and they understand kind of the pressure we're facing and the challenge that makes about actually making women feel, have the courage to take these things on. So I think, you know, and my friend Nick from the New Forest Off-Road Club says, we need women in positions where they're getting paid, you know, where they're making decisions, not just being shown, you know. So I feel like there are several layers to this, and having more women involved on every level makes a huge difference, especially in positions of making decisions, you know, where it's like they're not just employed by the brand, but they're making decisions on the media they'll do, on the clothing they're producing, you know, just across the board. So I guess all the sponsorship choices I made for the next 2 years, I chose to work with the brands that had more women involved, if I had a choice, you know. And that was, at some point I thought, you know, this is actually going to change the way the industry works and also make it easier for me to do the things I want to do. So I love seeing that. And I think, you know, that'll take time as well. But that's why I made those choices. So it's been really good. But yeah, you know, it's like there aren't as many options for women specific things. And then one thing I do is just get the men's version in, you know, a smaller size. But then, you know, sometimes it doesn't fit right. So, you know, I feel like women run brands, they're going to like make good options for women. You know, instead of having like a guy decide, oh, a woman will like this, it's like have a woman decide or at least get her input.
Another topic we would like to talk to you with you about is empowerment. And one of your main goals as a professional cyclist with a certain amount of publicity is working on empowering other non-cis male persons to get on their bikes, to ride more and to encourage them to explore their own limits and to try new things. For example, by hosting the Leia Rides Alaska Femme Trans Women Scholarship or the Torino Knees Rally in Europe. So in what way, from your perspective, would you describe cycling as an empowering sport?
I think cycling is super empowering because most people learn how to ride when they're young, and it's something that they can do, but they never imagined it could take them on these huge adventures. And it doesn't have to be really expensive. I mean, that's why I got into bike touring in the first place, is because it was such an inexpensive way to travel the world. You can live on a budget, you can sleep outside, but along the way you get to see so much, and you're entering spaces in a way that people want to come out and meet you. They're not intimidated by you. They're just curious about what you're doing. And I feel like that gives you such great interactions. And I want everybody to have that experience, men, women, any background, if they're curious about it. You know, if they think, wow, that looks really exciting and fun, you know, by creating opportunities for people to actually get to go do those things, it's super exciting for me because I remember like having these dreams, looking at maps, thinking, what would it like be like to ride there, you know, and then actually going and doing it, learning so much about different cultures and different lands that I want to share that, you know, because I feel like the more people that put themselves in these situations, it'll change their lives, and then they'll have, you know, a positive perspective of the bike in the future.
And speaking of mutual empowerment, we would also love to talk with you about feminist networks in the bike scene. For example, since a few months in Germany, there is a group called The Woman All Right, a group of female cyclists from different disciplines who work on establishing a non-cis male community within the sport and who want to enforce feminist politics in the cycling scene. Do you know other collectives or groups, maybe even acting internationally?
Yes, and that's been so cool to see women kind of forming cycling groups. I spent about 10 days or 2 weeks in the UK in, let's see, October. And there's a total revolution going on there. There's the New Forest Off-Road Club, and they're getting women to try riding, you know, gravel roads for the first time and going bikepacking and doing overnights. And there's the Sisters of the Wild, and they're taking women out for intro to bikepacking courses. And there's the Lakes Gravel Gang, and all these groups. There's STEEZY, which is kind of a racing collective for women, and all of these are happening in England, you know, one tiny country. And I feel like even where I am now in Tucson, Arizona, there's the Tucson Women Shredders, and they meet the second Wednesday of every week to go for a mountain bike ride. And I feel like so much of this is taking off because of social media. You know, it's like you can share what you're doing and where you're meeting and get people together through Instagram. You know, it's pretty simple, and then it really makes a huge difference. And then I feel like you create these groups and these opportunities, and even the women that aren't part of it yet are inspired by that other women are doing this stuff. So even if they can't make it to the camp out, they might go for a bike ride. And I like these groups because they're, you know, women of all ages, all backgrounds, all abilities, all sizes, and those are like heroes for their community that they're out doing it. So the more I see this and the more I hear about it, you know, I didn't even know about this group in Germany. It's just really exciting. I was in Iceland in September and met some women enduro riders that have a mountain bike, women's mountain bike group there with 1,000 members. You know, Iceland only has like 200,000 people in the population. It's like, how is this even possible? And they're like, oh yeah, let's go for a bike ride in 2 days. And, you know, 20 women showed up to ride for an hour in the rain. And I thought, this is so cool. You know, so anytime I'm traveling and I find a group like this, I love just going for a bike ride with them because it's just super, super positive to see and to meet different women. And then even through an hour, you get to kind of exchange stories and learn about each other and then think about, you know, collaborating on other rides in the future. So, you know, I guess the only thing I see with these groups that I don't love is when, you know, it becomes too virtual. I feel like the most important thing is to make meeting places where people actually get together and ride together. And then through that, it's like, you have such a better exchange when you're actually on bikes than when you're, you know, behind your phone or behind your computer. It's so much more memorable. And you have so many more ideas when you're actually doing it. So I guess that's the most important part to me is that, you know, it's great to form groups, but you have to get people on bikes as quickly as possible.
Speaking of those groups, you talked about inspiration and heroes, and that's another question we have for you. In your movie, I Just Want to Ride, you say you want to be an inspiration for other people, and we would like to know who is inspiring you.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any like bike heroes necessarily, but I, you know, I feel like recently I was listening to a story by Billie Jean King. She was a female tennis player, and she basically, like, female tennis players were in this position where they were, you know, not getting paid at all, not getting opportunities. And then she created her own league so that women could start getting paid. And within years, they're making like a real salary, and they were competing on a higher level and getting more press. And I feel like like somebody like her, I'm super inspired by that. She was not only like at the top of her at the top of the sport, she was the best player, but she was also working so hard to get women a better position. So recently, yeah, I've been thinking about her. I guess who else? You know, I'm super inspired by writers. You know, now I've started listening to audiobooks while I ride, and that's really changed my experience too. It keeps me up through the night. I get to hear like an exciting story, and so I'm just so grateful to have that. But yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of any other heroes at the moment, but I guess, you know, the people that I'm constantly inspired by, people that get out there and like make it happen when it seemed impossible. You know, I actually have a friend named Josie. She's a Paralympic athlete, and she's trying to make mountain biking a sport in the Paralympics. She is like missing her arm on one side. And then she's also going to join us for one of these bikepacking challenges. And she's just not saying, like, not receiving that she can't do stuff. She's just going to do it anyway. I had a woman write to me that's blind that is going to try to ride the Great Divide route. I didn't even know that was possible. You know, stuff like this, you're just like, wow, like it's hard enough being like fully able body doing this stuff. And then you hear about people like just making it work because they're just not going to take no for an answer. They're just going to do it anyway. So those kind of stories, I'm just like, just continually inspired by.